This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 81 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Index Fund Advisors, IFA.com. Horsemanship Radio is a part of the family of the Horse Radio Network. And today we have two icons of the horse industry. Both of them have resumes as long as my left arm and my right arm. And they have been huge influencers with the show. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that today. This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to the Horsemanship Radio. Thanks for joining us. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 1st and the 15th of the month, and I have my producer, Jen, with me today. Hi, Jen.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Well into 2017 and having a lot of fun getting ready for all the excitement we have coming up.
This is neat. It's a new year. It's a new beginning. It's a new start.
Yeah.
We're going to build on what we've gotten in 2016. Very excited.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, couldn't have done 2017 without 2016. You're absolutely right. And that's not just a farcical statement.
There you go.
Really, there were so many great seeds planted in 2016 that we are going to be reaping a lot of the benefits in 2017. And a lot of it was reacquainting with people that have long been in the industry, have maybe outlasted a lot of the industry. You know, they've done so well for so long. And, you know, it's time for some of us youngsters, huh, Jen?
Right.
some of us youngsters to, you know, reach into their experience bucket and see if we can glean a little bit of their perspective. And I think what's fun about today's guests is that they are just that, the definition of being able to have a long-term perspective now, and they're looking back at youth and saying, wow, you know, I was able to come for 35 years through all of this and get simpler and simpler. Or our other guest said things about like, gosh, I'm reaching out to people who are still older than me even and giving them recognition for influencing my life. And I guess really that's what I mean by influencers. They may have been loud about it, obvious about it, or they might not have at all. It might be something that you kind of have to think about and then go give them credit for because you realize that's where it came from.
Yes. It was fun to listen in on these interviews that we're going to listen to today. I hope everybody else does too. This is one that, listen to it while you can focus a little bit because there's all sorts of wonderful nuggets on it. It will cause you to reflect on what an influencer is because I had one concept of what an influencer was. And after listening to both of our guests today, it changed a little bit and it broadened a little bit. And I realized that there are so many people who influenced my equestrian life that it never occurred to me. It's like, oh, wow, that person had an enormous impact on who I am today. And it never occurred to me that they did until I listened to what Monty had to say about some of his, some of the people in his life that influenced who he has become. And then with, Miss Moffitt, I always wanted to say that, Miss Moffitt. I thought about her devotion to creating change within the equestrian instructors community. How we teach riding and what we teach, again, made me think a little more broadly about what a riding instructor is.
Mm-hmm. What were some of your light bulb moments? Can you tell us without spoiling everything?
I don't want to make any spoilers.
Okay.
An influencer can be someone that made a contribution to your life and probably many, many others that seemed to the rest of the world quite silent. We always think of influencers as people who have enormous personalities and a broad range and get written down in history books and things like that. When in fact, very, very important influencers. It made me think back at the in physics. There's a theory about if a butterfly flaps his wings, that can change the weather on the other side of the earth or something to that effect.
Oh, and I didn't hear that.
Influencers do that. They do many, many small things throughout their lives which creates perhaps small changes for a lot of people, but those small changes in turn end up being enormous changes later in life. And I thought, wow, right. what an interesting retrospective to look back at those people and then try to become one of them. You know, because not everybody's cut out to be Monty Roberts or someone who's in the public eye.
Yeah, big stage.
Uh-huh. Big stage. Some of us are cut out to be the person who influences others in a more quiet way, but it is no less important.
That's right.
That's
right.
What I learned.
Like a lot of moms out there, you know, who keep their kids in line so they grow up to be good people. And, right. you know, we're going to give credit to everybody today. Yeah, but
sure. Moms and our second guest alluded a little bit to riding instructors.
Yeah.
The riding instructor who is coaching a Olympic team or one whose students go on and are Olympic riders. Those people are the public influencers, the ones with the personalities and the ones we hear about and read about in our magazines. But are the riding instructors who thoroughly and properly teach beginners all of those important lessons are just as important, because without those, we never get the Olympians.
That's right. And also, this is a shout out to all those people who are influencers who never do it in a negative way. In other words, they don't put other people down in order to bring themselves up.
Absolutely.
You know, they actually work very quietly in the background, and that's their influence, isn't it? You know,
that's
that
right.
they were always polite. They're always building right. character for themselves. Right. And then
how often have we heard about someone, just if we're going to stay within our own niche, in the horse world, and this is across all aspects of life. They wanted to ride. They wanted to become a good horseman. And they had a negative experience with someone who was in a mentor's role. And it discouraged them, or they stopped riding, or they went down a bad path. So you need to look at yourself as an influencer regardless, even if all you're doing is all you're doing. If you're the riding instructor who's out there teaching putt-putts, doing up-downs at riding camp in the summer, and you teach 200 kids in a year over the summer, 199 of those kids might never get on a horse again. But the 200th, if you do your job well and positively and encouragingly without the rose-colored glasses on, but still encouraging that person might go on to be the Olympian someday. But if that experience had been negative, might not have been.
Absolutely.
A lot of responsibility there.
And the last point I'll make, too, before we bring them in here, because I hope we have people on the edge of their seat to hear this, but is that the top instructors should really be influencing the little up-downs, you know, the little guy who's starting out. Because if we could start at the beginning with the best instruction, we would actually get further ahead in the industry, so that maybe our teaching is a little upside down that way too. And how do we get the best instructors to encourage those little beginners at the beginning and build a great industry from it?
That's
I have
right.
to think about that.
There's a lot of light bulb stuff in these two interviews. I'm very excited about it. And I've already listened to them. So let's get started.
Let's go.
Right after this from IFA.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Hebner, president of Index Fund Advisors and proud owner of Monty Roberts Willing Partners graduate, He's a Sugar Bear. You know, investment portfolios are a lot like horses. You need to find one that best suits you, your temperament, and your stage of life. Some people might like an energetic horse and an aggressive investment portfolio, while others are more comfortable with a gentle ride and a more conservative investment portfolio. The trick is to find the one that's right for you. That's what Index Fund Advisors is all about, matching people with portfolios, risk-appropriate, low-cost, and globally diversified investment portfolios. You can find the right portfolio for you by taking the Risk Capacity Survey at IFA.com. That's IFA as in Index Fund Advisors. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-643-3133. That's 888-643-3133.
Known as the man who listens to horses, Monty Roberts is the creator of the world-renowned and revolutionary equine training technique called Join Up. Monty travels the world demonstrating that nonviolent, gentle training creates breakthrough performance as you partner with your horse. Monty grew up on a working horse farm as a firsthand witness to traditional, often violent methods of horse training and breaking the spirit with an abusive hand. And rejecting that, he went on to win 9 world championships in the show ring. Today, Monty's goal is to share that his message is that violence is never the answer. Roberts has been encouraged by Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II with the award called the Membership in the Royal Victorian Order. And she became also the patron of Join Up International. Other honors received were the ASPCA Founders Award and the MSPCA George T. Engel Humanitarian Award. And Monty is credited with launching the first of its kind, Equus Online University. It's an interactive online lesson site that is the definitive learning tool to violence-free training. Well, welcome, Dad, Monty Roberts. How's it going?
It's going fine, Debbie. Good. Nice to speak with you.
Good to speak with you again. It's been days. No, it's been like one day, I think. So we kind of got our heads together and put a plan together to share some information with the listeners, because I hadn't caught up with you for a few weeks anyway, up on Horsemanship Radio. We wanted to pull you out here. I was thinking at first that we were going to talk a lot about 2017, all the things that you were going to be able to accomplish in 2017 leading into Gentling Wild Horses courses that you have coming up in the summer, and starting off with February, where we have the certified instructors coming for their conference from all over the world, and that we also have Lajos Kassai coming from Hungary to do his demonstration of archery in the old style Hungarian thing. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, how are we going to pack all that in? And then I thought, wait a minute. You just went on this incredible pilgrimage up to Northern Cal for just a few hours. And I think that should take our whole interview, because it was so important.
Well, it was important, Debbie. And I would want your listeners to somehow transpose themselves to their 82nd year, which I'm in now, because I've discovered that we think a lot differently in our 82nd year than we do in our 52nd year or 42nd year, which many of your listeners would be in. So please understand that when you pass that 80 mark, or when you euphemistically, when you start to finish up what you've done here on this globe of ours, certain things become far more important to you than they were in the early days. And when I wrote my first book, Sister Agnes Patricia was, in fact, and still is, the most influential person in my life. But it's a long race that we're in here, mm-hmm. and there's someone closing very fast, because Queen Elizabeth II, Queen of England, has been so influential to me that she's neck and neck with Sister Agnes Patricia now, which neither one of them care about or know about. That's okay. But I know, because they influence me to be who I am. And I could be someone very different if I'd have allowed my life to be influenced by other people. And I had a lot of people in my life that would have taken me down paths very different from where I actually traveled.
Right. We should explain that Sister Agnes Patricia was your 8th grade school teacher.
Well, she was, and she was more than that, because from the age of 9, she kept me from killing my father and put me on a course to accept nonviolence in my life, right, which I hadn't had a time of that prior. Until I was about 13, violence was the centerpiece of my life, with a father that used violence against me diabolically.
Right.
And Sister Agnes Patricia read my manuscript of my first book, but didn't see it between covers because of her death in 1995. And the book was launched in 96 in England, and she didn't see the finished publication. but she was so proud of me reading the transcript, typewritten pages, if you will. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I visited with her with my manuscript in Watsonville, California in 1995, just before her death at 83 years of age. And she was incredible for me. Looking back on it, I never would have been anything like the person I am now without her influence. Mm. And certainly the Queen of England since 1989, 28 years now, has really influenced my life massively. And as I say, is running neck and neck for the most influential. But you look back, Debbie, at this point in time, and you start saying, who were those people that were not so flamboyant or not so upfront about it all, but humble people that simply moved along under the current, so to speak, and really influenced your life?
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I realized how influential John Brazil Jr. was to me. I first met him in 1948. I remember the event. It was in July. I remember the event very well because he came to Salinas, California, to the competition grounds where I was born and raised. And he had been working for Cutter Laboratories. They were an organization that had a lot of animals because they created medicines for the animals, Cutter Laboratories, from up in the Oakland area, Livermore.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a family there, Frank Santos Sr. and his oldest son, Russ Santos, and his younger son, Frankie Jr. The Santos boys were influential in the rain cow horses of early California because they worked the cattle for Cutter Laboratories. And they came to the shows, and these guys were talented, man. And they had a young guy working for them by the name of John Brazil Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And he had married a lady by the name of Lori in 1946. And 2 years later, in 1948, he comes there with a group of horses that were just incredible for their day. And he won everything in sight. And he suddenly became a hero for me, this incredibly talented young man, very athletic, very small, but riding those big horses and working cattle like I'd never seen before. And yet he was very quiet, very underspoken, extremely humble. And as I went through my competition life and right on through to the retirement from competition, I realized that John Brazil Jr. really influenced me. You never heard a bad word about anybody from John Brazil Jr. And the horse showing business was filled with criticisms and people who were speaking out to put themselves in a higher position, by mm-hmm. knocking someone else down,
mm-hmm.
Talking to the judges in the meantime about how bad Monty Roberts stopped his horses crazy things like this. And there were a lot of those kind of people. John Brazil Jr. was not that and is not that today. And I only discovered from a conversation with Al Dunning, while Jamie from your radio was here
Jamie
on
Jennings.
Our property.
Oh, that's
Jamie
right.
Jennings, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking to Al Dunning, and Al told me that he discovered that John Brazil at 95 was still alive, and his wife beside him, something less than 95, which she doesn't want to talk about.
Okay.
But they're both over 90, let's say. And they are a dream couple living in a little house in Geyserville, California. And he's still working with horses.
Yeah.
And Al Dunning told me that he had a hoist that he developed to get his saddle up on the horse because he no longer could put it up there. So I said, Pat, you got to get his details. You got to get his numbers and find John Brazil Jr. He's suddenly become very important to me because I realize that he's the one that instilled in me an obligation within myself never to criticize another horseman by name in public. Mm-hmm. In private conversations, if you want to say what you think about somebody's work in one way or another, that's one thing. But to go forward and try to bring another person down in an effort to enhance your own position, I'm obsessed with not doing that. And I don't do it. And it's because of John Brazil, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So Pat and I made a trip up there, 8 hours this way and 8 hours back. And Pat drove every mile of it. And I have to thank her for that. Mm-hmm. But we spent about 5 or 6 hours, 7 hours with John and Lori Brazil. And like I say, he's still got 20, 30 head of cattle there that he's taking care of to work his horses with. And you and I both know he's not going to go off and show these horses in competition, but he's doing what he loves to do.
He's still working training on them. And
yeah, he goes out there and gets them out of the stall and takes them out for me. And he's got a bad hip right now and he can't get on at the moment. But he says he's going to get on again, and I have to believe him. Yeah. But he's leading some pretty rambunctious babies around, and he's still working with them and getting along fine. But still talking very well about everybody and congratulating those that have moved on and improved. And Debbie, teaching his horses to come to the mounting block like I teach mine to do.
Good.
That's a new thing in the world. Yep. And the horse comes to the mounting block and sideways passes up to present you with the stirrup. So he's got his horses all doing that and proud of it. And there's his hoist made to lift his saddle up to get it on the horse.
I may need to get this pattern for that. I'd like to.
Yeah, well, it's well, me too. But Debbie, not enough people know about those humble characters who are gliding along under the current, and they listen too much to those of us that wax on and I've become very famous and have best-selling books and everything, and I call my methods by a name. And, you know, I didn't realize how public I am compared to a guy like John Brazil. Mm-hmm. And the value of not being public is tremendous. It is absolutely tremendous. The bad thing about it is that it's hard to influence a lot of people to go your way if you're totally under the current. So I've become, for me, inside of me, his mouthpiece.
Gotcha.
And I'm using this as the first time I've discussed it. I'm using this as an opportunity to bring John Brazil's presence and his personality to the world. Here's a guy who I never saw whip a horse. I never saw him. I saw him using traditional concepts, that's for sure, because that's what we had. Mm-hmm. And that's all we knew. But he was never an overtly violent man, either to horse or human, and not to the dog that he still trains and things like that. Mm-hmm. It was an incredible visit that brought back so many things to me. Mm-hmm. And he goes on the list now as closing in on Queen Elizabeth II and it and Sister Agnes Patricia and others that have influenced me.
Tell me about some of his. It sounds like Al Dunning might have been a bit mentored by him. Certainly influenced and probably taught him a few things, at least in character. Who else do you know over the years? Who was around Johnny Brazil at the time, and who do you think came along because of him?
Well, obviously, at 95, you know, he doesn't have very many people that were around him in those early days. They're all gone. Don Dodge.
Older ones,
Older ones, gone. But I'm sure Bobby Ingersoll, he's still alive, and others of you know, relatively close to my age, were influenced by him. Greg Ward, for instance. And people like that were influenced by him, whether they know it or not. Mm-hmm. And I get so upset with those people that say, and Bobby Ingersoll is one of the people that says that I don't respect tradition.
Yeah.
And I say you can respect tradition without throwing it out or failing to move on and improve yourself. You can still respect tradition. So it is important to me to show that John Brazil respected tradition all the way through. Mm-hmm. And yet he found a way to constantly improve his horsemanship until he was still competing in his 80s.
Oh, was he? He was still competing.
Yeah, he was still competing, not like he did, you know, in so many shows or anything like that. But he was in the Snaffle Bit Futurity, and gosh, I think he won a trailer in it in 1983 or something like that. So looking back on it 20 years ago, he was still very active. And so he influenced a lot of people, whether they like it or accept it or not. And John Brazil and Bobby Ingersoll and Al Dunning all received my annual award that I give out for those that choose to work with horses in a nonviolent manner. And whether anybody likes that or not, and I know that there are trainers today who would still say a horse needs a good beating every now and then just to keep them in line. And they would go on to say that children need the same thing. Well, we're moving on, folks. And
yeah.
There is no necessity for violence. There's just simply none. And nonviolence in the use of training horses will produce you a horse that does it because they want to and not because they're forced to. Mm-hmm. So I mean, they give it a better performance. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching the Snaffle Bit Futurity this year, and I'm watching the man who actually wound up winning it go down and stop his horse and then realize that his hat was dislodged and still on his head. But, sorry?
Yes, I know who you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, and he let his horse stand there while he adjusted his hat. And then he spun like a top and realized that the hat, not fitting very well, I guess, was dislodged again. So he just let him stop and stand there and then adjusted it and went on. And if we'd have done that in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and 70s, when I was still showing, we would have been marked way down. Maybe we would have been zeroed out because we went off course, they would call it. Where today, people are allowing the horse a chance. And you don't see the pulling to stop like you used to see. The reins are loose. If you see a horse go down there and brace himself and lift his front end and get pulled in the mouth, his points go down. Thanks. Congratulations, Rein Cow Horse Association.
Yes.
And all of the organizations. Dressage is changing. Show jumping is changing. Polo is changing. Congratulations to all of them who have discovered that the flight animal does not need violence. And John Brazil Jr. is one of those people that started that little germ of understanding that way back in 1948 when I watched him win. He won, Debbie, he won the Hackamore class in Salinas, right there on the grounds where I lived. And he won the heavyweight stock horse class, that's the Rein Cow Horse class for heavyweight horses they had at that time, and he won the lightweight open bridle horse thing. And then there was a novice bridle horse thing, and he won that. So then when I ask him, you know, because I'm a genius, and I've done everything, and I've won all the things, and I won 8 world championships in the Rein Cow Horse division.
Right.
That's wonderful. He's won 20.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
who am I? Yeah. I'm a neophyte. It's true that I've gone on and had world champion horses in racing and world champion horses in rodeo big time. I mean, that horse, Scotty, that I had, went on to have, I think, $4.5 million or something earned off his back in the bulldogging. And I've gone right across the spectrum, led the world for 18 years in the production of young horses for racing at Hollywood Park's sale, which was a March sale. And your mother and I had led the world in that for 18 years. So that's wonderful, Mr. Roberts. But where did you get your information? From people like John Brazil Jr.
Yeah, one of your world championships, wasn't that on Night Mist?
Two of them.
Two
of my world championships were on Night Mist. And his boss, John Brazil's boss, died in, I don't know, I think it was about 1974 or, no, sorry. It was in 1966, his boss, W.D. Dana, who owned the Empire State Building, died. Oh, that's right. And they had a sale of all of his horses. And I bought Night Mist, already trained by John Brazil and shown in the Hackamore by him. And I put her in the bridle and won two world championships with her in the bridle, working cow horse. And that mare won 31 contests in succession. I don't think it's ever been done since that time. But she was incredible. And John Brazil and I were like partners in that effort. Mm.
Mm. So he started Night Mist? He probably started her.
He started Night Mist. Mm-hmm. He bought her from Perry Cotton, Tulare, California. She was by Midnight the Second and out of a Lucky Blanton mare called Night Mist. She's buried here on this farm. Yeah. And she produced, when bred to Johnny Tivio, two world champions. Mm. Night Mist did. Yeah. So it just goes on and on. Yeah. And yet, you know, Johnny will sit there and just say, well, it was nice and I did okay. And he didn't write any books. He didn't start any organizations like me. He's just an underspoken, humble human.
But he kind of did, though. He kind of did because he influenced you. And I think that's part of the point here, is that influencers are influencers, and they can create amazing legacies and lasting character in a lot of different people. We just need to recognize that. We just need to find them.
No question.
Hold them up.
And Debbie, the people that I had in my life that could have influenced me to be another kind of person were everywhere I looked. You know, I had people who were absolute criminals that made a lot of money throughout my existence. I've had people offer me huge sums under the table for things that could have influenced me to go a different direction. But Sister Agnes Patricia would not have been happy in heaven if I'd have done that. And,
and neither would you.
So we all can be influenced. And the gang kids on the streets of Chicago right now are being influenced by people around them all the time to be negative, to be horrible, to kill one another. So everybody should respect the power of influence. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, Queen Elizabeth II has been more influential for good than any world leader that ever lived.
Yeah, especially with animals. I mean, I don't think anybody will ever beat her for that. She's outlived everybody else.
And that one is a clear win.
Yeah.
But for people too.
Yeah.
I mean, here she, at my request, she gives a wonderful reception for the head of the police of Sao Paulo, Brazil, mm-hmm. Maurizio Perez, mm-hmm. and she gives him a beautiful certificate for using my books, which she influenced, to retrain the people down there not to use violence on the street, and they were killing 4,000 people a year in Sao Paulo. And 3 years after my books were used to teach the new recruits going onto the street, they had zero gun-related incidences in the third year of their performance. Okay. And the Queen was extremely happy about that. So here I am trying to be that mouthpiece for people, humble people like John Brazil, whose voices are only heard through those of us that choose to make them the public aware of them.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. I have one last question that I'd be remiss in not asking before I take too much more of your time. But there must be a sort of a overarching answer to this question, but it comes up so often when you hear about greatness in horse trainers or greatness in horses. What's the highest reward for a horse? What motivates them the most, in your opinion?
Well, in my opinion, horses are most gratified when everything is going fun for them. And if somehow you can create, and I think cutting, for instance, where you leave your hand down and you don't rein them, I think Johnny Tivio had fun with the cutting. Really had fun with it. I think Chrome, the horse that I ride right now, has fun with cutting. He looks over the fence at the cattle and sort of like says to me, let's go do that, you know. horse is having fun, and it's no fun to get hit. It's no fun to have a pair of spurs drive through your skin. That's not fun at all. But if you can cause things to be fun for your horse, that's the most gratifying time in their life. I don't mean that you have to treat them like people and take them into the house with you and call that fun. No, learn their language. Learn what moves them. Learn what makes them feel good. And then you will learn what to do with them. It's not stuffing treats down their throat, I can tell you that. Food is no reward because no blade of grass has ever run from a horse. So reward comes from things like dropping your eyes and walking away. Mm-hmm. What? Walking away? That sounds rude. No, it doesn't, because no predator can drop their eyes and walk away after making contact. So the horse will come and follow you. And then a rub between the eyes where they can't see their body, between their eyes. They love that. And they love to be loved by you. But treat them like a horse and not like another human.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, thank you for that. And thank you for your story. And now we've got to get on with 2017 and have you back to talk about all these things that are upcoming and all the things that you will have done.
Debbie, yeah. I know we need two or three of these sessions to tell you what's happening in 2017.
Just the
I'm
schedule.
Getting ready to pack my bags, you know, and go to Brazil.
Yeah.
And I'm taking Joanna along with us because she's going to be working on the next book, and I've got to find a literary agent, and I'm going at this thing like killing snakes because I really want to produce another book that's right for me and tells the full story now, because more things have happened to me since the first book was printed than happened to me before the first book was printed.
That's
so
right.
I've got a lot to do. And at 82, I got to keep taking my supplements and, visiting my doctor and trying to be with you as long as I can. But I also have to recognize the fact that the calendar goes on. But the Queen is 90, and maybe I'll make it to that.
Yeah, and Johnny Brazil, you know, would say, suck it up. He's doing fine.
He has no mercy for me. And that's
right.
Age business.
That's right. All right. Well, thank you very much. We've taken a lot of your time, and I appreciate you being on Horsemanship Radio.
Oh, that's okay, Debbie. I was pleased to be here, and keep up the good work. And thank you for having me on.
Horse is your partner in sport, in leisure, and just in life. To keep him at his peak performance and optimal health, a solid nutritional foundation is key. Ideally, horses are able to graze fresh, growing grasses, which most closely mimic their natural diet. But that may not always be possible, and we may need to supply some of those missing ingredients in today's diets and provide more functional foods. One component of a horse's diet that is often underfed are omega-3 fatty acids. While more prevalent in fresh forages, harvested forages are lower in omega-3 fatty acids due to their more advanced maturity. Obviously, grasses and legumes have to grow to a sufficient height in order to be harvested, while foraging patterns of horses show great preference for shorter, less mature plants. That's why modern horsemen and horsewomen trust Omega Horseshine to provide a powerful, bountiful source of omega-3 fatty acids for their equine partners. Look for Omega Horseshine from Omega Fields at your local tack and feed supplier, or you can find them online at omegafields.com.
Heather Moffat began riding as a young child in the UK, but by her early teens was questioning the methods being used to teach. By the age of 16, she had developed a different method of teaching riding, especially how to synchronize exactly with the movement of the horse. This enabled her to teach beginners with extraordinary speed and also to rectify long-established faults in experienced riders. More than 20 years ago, she pioneered the teaching of riding with equisimulators. That's machines which simulate the movement of the horse, enabling very precise hands-on teaching and in total safety, successfully teaching hundreds of riders all over the world. She is the founder of Enlightened Equitation. Well, welcome, Heather Moffat. I'm glad to have you back.
Hi, Debbie. And it's very nice to talk to you again. So, and thank you for asking me.
Yeah, of course. We were co-talking a little bit with another person that's a blogger down in Australia, and you're known all over.
Jane.
Is it Jane? Yeah. Okay, there we go. Yeah. And we're just excited to have you back because we had just a short interview before. People can go back to episode 63 of Horsemanship Radio and revisit that and get to know Heather a little bit again. And then, and I'm sure, you know, as active as you are on Facebook and all the other social medias and as many students as you have out there in the world, all your tentacles out there, a lot of people I know who you are and what you do, but we wanted to get a little bit deeper into Heather Moffat's concepts and some of the accomplishments that you've had and teach us a little bit more, Heather, today. I'd love to hear a little bit more about Enlightened Equitation and what you're working on today.
Yeah. Okay. I'm all ready.
Okay.
So, as I said earlier, you'll have to excuse me because I've got a stinking cold here, which is very, I haven't had one for a year, so I'm a bit croaky. I do apologize to the audience.
You do sound great. They, you know, we all love the English accent anyway. We're not going to get past that.
Yeah. No worries. So, you know, I'm sort of working on this new project, the Online Riding School, which it's going to build up into a library of films right the way through from, hopefully we'll do a beginner's series at some point. At the moment, I'm just working basically through the chapters of my book, Enlightened Equitation, sort of following pretty much the pattern of lessons. They're only fairly short videos so that they're not too difficult to assimilate at one time on, you know, subjects right the way through that are covered in the book chapters. And so from then on, we'll probably start doing extra series as well. My yard manager, Kay Brown, is an expert in long reining and long lining through to long reining. In fact, she trained pretty extensively with Kelly Marks before she came to me, and so, but she's now gone on to do the classical long reining as well, and I plan to do some in hand work as well, so that we can cover the whole gamut of things. But as you probably remember from last year when I was at invited to do Monty's instructors convention a day, and you know, I was talking about how important it is that the rider learns to synchronize with the movement of the horse, and that's something that is still so badly taught. And obviously I pioneered the teaching of riding with horse movement simulators 20 years ago now. I've taught literally thousands as far afield as America and Australia on the simulators, as well as obviously on horses. And, you know, having the machines has made a big difference to how I teach, because it means that hands-on, I could actually show people precisely the movements of the lower back and the pelvis that enable them to then synchronize their movements totally with the horse, so that they appear to be doing nothing. Also, they're far more secure, so it's much safer. It's also much more elegant to look at. So the whole thing looks altogether much more harmonious. But it's just so much kind of the horse. And that, for me, is always the bottom line.
Yeah, good. I love the story about how you were watching the old Westerns on TV, US play into this, and that you felt like the riders looked like they were one with the horse, and you thought you were reaching to your traditionalist there in England, but you looked at that and went, that looks fun, right?
Well, it was more the fact that I thought that they looked very glued to the saddle over even, very rough terrain. And I was sort of analyzing what they were doing with their backs that I probably wasn't. And I realized one day that they were actually absorbing the movement through the flexion of the lower back. And at the time, I didn't realize how much it also really involves the, particularly in sitting trot, which obviously Western riders don't do quite so much of. It's more to do as well with the rising and the falling of the seat bones separately with the two sides of the horse's back and the flexion of the back, so that the rider then just is completely in sync with the movement. And it was through watching cowboy films that I went out on my father's hunter, and I was mucking about on a friend's race exercise saddle. So I'd got my stirrups up like a jockey, and then I suddenly realized that whatever I was doing, I was suddenly much more glued to the saddle than I had been. So of course rushed back to the stables and put a normal saddle on and went off and practiced again. And then I realized that whatever I was doing seemed to be what the best riders did. Then went off again a couple of days later and sort of practiced the same thing with canter, so that I was able to sit much more glued and much quieter in the saddle. And that just sort of sparked my interest. I was the sort of child that took my toys to bits to find out how they worked. And so I suppose I did the same with riding, really. I've always had a very analytical brain. For somebody who was an absolute dunderhead at maths, I don't quite know where I got it from, to be honest. But
curiosity.
Very curious. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I like to find out how things work. And so I suppose that's what I did. And, I've taught literally thousands of people now in 46-year career. It's so simple in how we teach it. And it works. That's the thing. I mean, I don't know if you've seen, in fact, I did put a bit on the online riding school too, which I must give you a subscription so you can have a look at it.
I did have a little play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm sure we can give you a bigger one. Rishabh Sharma, who's my saddler who makes my flexi saddles in India, he'd never ever sat on a horse before. He was 26, I think, at the time. And I put him on the simulator for two short sessions, about 20 minutes each, then put him on one of my Lusitano schoolmasters the following day on the lunge. He would never have known he has never been on a horse before. And it's because, instead of just saying nebulous things like sit deeper or relax your lower back or go with the movement or follow the movement, that's even more stupid because normally if you're behind following something, you're behind it. We teach people precisely what to do. And so, of course, it takes the guesswork out of learning. It's just not rocket science. And I use a very simple equation. If you put two and two together in sync, you make one. Put two and two together out of sync and you make a mess.
That's right.
It's become a real I'm very particular about it, with my own enlightened equitation teachers, because we have, we do teacher training. And the first level, as far as I'm concerned, is to teach the actual rider. But that to me is by far the most important level, because a friend of mine in Holland, I could easily put him up to our level four, which means he could train all the Grand Prix movements and everything. But I said to him, if he wants to do the teacher training, he's got to do level one first, because for me, beginners are by far and away the most important of all people. Unfortunately, they're often relegated to the lowest of the low instructors or even working students in this country. Whereas, in fact, if they were taught very well at the beginning, that's where the basics, the foundations are laid. And therefore, for me, it's absolutely imperative. And the people that come here for the simulator workshops, mostly they've been riding many years, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, or even more. And, you know, it's because they've not had the good instruction in the first place. And, you know, they get such light bulb moments, you know, when we tell them, you know, sort of show them what to do on the simulators and what have you. And many, many times, you know, people say, well, why has nobody told me that before? They're quite angry almost. And, you know,
it's a lot of time invested.
It is so simple. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, and after 46 years, you know, my enthusiasm to pass on the knowledge isn't dimmed, hence the online riding school.
That's amazing, so, actually, Heather, that you haven't been burned out by all this, too.
Well, it's a bit like your father, isn't it? You know, yeah. I mean, look at him at his age. He, you know, he's still going strong. I think he looks better than ever, if anything.
He loves it. He is passionate about it. In fact, he says something that I think you would agree with that I just heard you kind of allude to, which is he said, if all learning is from 1 to 10, 0 to 1 is the most important part of that whole learning curve. Yeah,
it really is, you know. And so that's, although I must confess that I've had some success. I mean, I've been, obviously the British Horse Society is our sort of governing body of, you know, sort of equestrian instruction, etc. here. And you know, I'm confessed that I refused to do the exams when I was in my teens because I wasn't allowed at the time to teach what I had already found out. So I just said, well, you know, more or less, you know, I'm not going to do it. And so I was told I'd never make a career outside the British Horse Society. And here I am 46 years later. I've been past chairman, county chairman here in Devon of the British Horse Society, and also still on the county committee. And because I believe in fighting from within. And so I had a massive rant on Facebook in the summer. I had a young student here from one of the colleges here in England, and she'd been so demoralized about her riding and been told that she was useless. And I was really angry about it. And so I put a massive rant on Facebook, which must have struck a chord because it had over 1,200 shares. Never, ever had such a post before. And I'm now in talks with the British Horse Society. The head of policy and the director of education came down to see me in October, and we are hoping to liaise more closely. And one of my own enlightened equitation teachers is actually on the board of trustees, the national board. So, you know, I begin to feel that we're actually making some progress.
Good. Thank you for that. You know? Thank you for that. We do need to keep evolving, don't we? And I know when Martin Clunes got on there and was influential.
Martin's great.
Isn't he great? Yeah. You know, and he comes from a perspective that I love that is, you know, let's just be
very
a little
genuine.
More.
You know,
let's be a little more realistic about everything. And he wants it to evolve too. So not to digress, but here's where I think I admire you so much too, besides history, you're taking it into the next generation. And to me, what you said struck a chord about the best instructors should be our foundational instructors, our teachers.
Absolutely.
And your riding school, so I'm looking at the site right now, the online riding school, puts you in that position, doesn't it? If you're bringing in people that have not. Tell us what how you make the transition from the book, which a beginner can pick up, to translating that into lessons. That must be a visual medium now, going from a reading.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, the book is probably, well, it is suitable for beginners, but more probably for adult beginners. But I did actually write a book for beginners. It's an ebook, which I'm sort of revamping a little bit because I do feel that beginners need a bit more probably than is in the book, the main book, Enlightened Equitation, because they don't know the terminology or anything we use in the horse world. You know, you've got to assume that they know nothing, which they do. They know nothing. And so whereas we might talk about rising trot, or we might talk about being on the correct diagonal or what have you, they wouldn't have a clue what you were talking about. And so the book then, you know, sort of went into much more depth about the very, very beginnings, even teaching you how to mount, all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And a chapter on horse behavior as well, because that's something else I feel very strongly about, that riding schools should be teaching about horse behavior, because, you know, people have no idea that, you know, one end of a horse bites and the other one can kick if you're not very careful. And they can be very, very naive about such things. And, you know, when I had a riding school years ago, a much bigger riding school back in East Anglia, You know, you just wouldn't believe some of the things people did. You know, it was a big, big Hanoverian that I had, who was a great horse. But his name was Nipper for a reason, his nickname, his stable name. And we had this elderly lady here that used to be on television as an animal sort of behaviorist, Barbara Woodhouse. I don't know
if you've
heard of her. Yeah.
And yeah. Walkies, let's go for walkies. Thank you, Jen. I almost was going to say that.
Yep. And, but she used to give horses polo mints out of her mouth. And I came around the corner one day to find this client's mother trying to give Nipper a polo out of her mouth. I mean, how on earth she didn't get her whole nose taken off, I don't know. But people just can be so stupid. And so they need to have, you know, background information about horses. You know, I think this is the problem here in England in particular. People come for a lesson. The horse is tacked up, all the ponies tacked up, and groomed, etc. Mm. They ride, they go home.
Yeah.
When I've taught on the continent, particularly in Holland, where I've taught quite a bit, you know, there's nearly always a clubhouse. People tend to go in for a coffee or a beer or what have you afterwards, the adults anyway, not the children.
Yeah.
They are taught to groom and tack up their horses before they ride. And there's a much more social atmosphere as well. And I think that's why people then learn more about sort of the other things to do with horses rather than just going and riding and going home. And it's more like a golf club or something would be here, which, you know, I think that's missing in the UK. I don't know what it's like in the States from that point
worse,
of view.
Oh, worse, probably, actually.
Yeah, it could be probably no better anyway. But no, with the online riding school, you know, my message has been to try to spread the word of a kinder way to ride and train. And I'm just hoping that it will take off. I mean, the thing is, it's £6.99 a month, which YouTube take £2 of that from me anyway. It's the price of a takeaway or most equestrian magazines are about £3.75, £4 here. So, you know, they've got something they can refer to, which is very specific topic each month, and it'll build up into a library. And but, you know, quite a few people have said, well, even £6.99 a month is too expensive. Yeah. And you think, well, you know, it's whether or not they really want to learn for the sake of the horse and their own enjoyment and safety. So that's what it's all about, is to try to spread the word of a kinder way to ride and train in bite-sized chunks that people can, you know, just literally click on the category and get some very clear instruction about, you know, a particular subject. So we'll be working later on, you know, I think next month we're doing feel and starting, and you know, on the aids. And then we'll work it right the way through to all the lateral work, et cetera, and gradually, you know, build up to doing high level work too, hopefully. But that's the plan anyway, if it goes okay.
Yeah, it's looking good. I'm looking at correct use of legs, quickly correcting faults, first time on a horse, dismounting.
That was just, those were just the free
foundation. Yeah, it's just the foundation ones, but instance, they're all practical. They're all good. Saddle balance, use of reins.
The legs one, I mean, it was just something that was an impromptu moment a couple of years ago when somebody'd been saying to me about the use of the leg on Facebook, and so I thought, that was just on my phone, and so I just did literally, I don't know if it's about 6 minutes, 7 minute video, something like that, and it had dozens of shares. Because people, you know, I was up at Kelly's actually a few years ago. She'd invited me up to do the horse psychology course, and she put us all into groups. And she said, right, okay, how do you get a horse in front of the leg? So I asked the rest of my group, how do you get a horse in front of the leg? And they said, well, you use more leg. Yeah, how do you use your legs? Well, you use more leg. And I said, how do you use your leg? One of them stood up on one leg, you know, and sort of was squeezing upwards and backwards. I said, now just try that with both. Well, I'd fall on my nose, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
And I said, well, what do you think you do when you're on a horse? And so, you know, it's that sort of thing that people are just not given the explanations for. And, you know, I just think it's such a shame that people miss out on so much of the communication with the horse. Because here in the UK, virtually very few people are taught the weight aids. You try riding one of my Lusitanos, if the rider's not straight in the saddle, and they end up looking like they're drunk in charge of two pairs of
flopping
legs.
Them.
You know? And They're not taught the aids of the seat in downward transitions and for collection, etc. So all they've got are the hands and the legs. Now that's what 16 combinations, maximum combinations of aids you can have. You add the seat bones for directional purposes, you add the weight aids, you add the body weight, you add the body positioning. That's a whole language of aids that most people are missing out on. And that's what, you know, we want to try to encourage, because again, it's not rocket science. It's so simple to do. And people make things far too difficult. You know, you've got enough to think about when you're on the back of the horse without making it unduly complicated. So,
you have more experience in your little finger than most people that will probably be accessing this at first. So it's easy for you to say. Somebody told me the story of Picasso, who was scribbling on a napkin and some guy's watching this thing unfold and says, "Wow, that's incredible." And he says, "How much will you charge for it?" And he gave some outrageous high number. And the guy goes, "What? You just spent 5 minutes?" And I goes, "No, I spent years training on this, you know?" So at a master level, and that's what we want to get, because you say it's not rocket science, but man, sometimes an instructor will confuse somebody to the point where they think, this must be rocket science. It's really hard to do.
Well, I think some instructors make things complicated because it sounds too good. You get some books that are incredibly complicated in the way they're written.
Yes, that's true.
And I think people then think it's got to be good. If they can't understand it, they think it's got to be good. And it's a bit like sort of lots of people bought, you know, sort of like Stephen Hawking's wonderful book, If You Could Understand It, A Brief History of Mankind, because it sounded so complicated, but most people couldn't understand it. So, you know, and it's that sort of thing that I think, you know, it's still prevalent in the horse world.
Well, thanks again. Thanks for updating us. First of all, it's been about a year. I'm glad to have you on again. Yeah. And thank you for your sharing about your new venture here. Started last fall, basically.
Well, thank you for asking me about it. So
I will be looking for you on Facebook, because you put up a lot of tips and people should get on your Facebook page and see your conversations there. They're wonderful sharing. We know some of our instructors, our Monty Roberts certified instructors, are Kelly Marks, who you've mentioned, and Tessa Horan,
right.
And I don't
know
how many others.
Yeah, Tessa Horan, and then we've got several of Kelly's RAs as well. They're with us too.
We'll be seeing you in all the social medias and stay in touch with you, and I encourage people to look you up.
Whisper the language of the herd. Listen, you don't have to say a word.
It's time for Jamie Jennings to fetch an email from Monty Roberts' inbox and share a morsel of Monty's wisdom in a little segment we like to call Ask Monty.
Leave this world a better place than mine. The magic in the...
Dear Monty, when I am witnessing an experienced horseman beating, I mean really beating a horse in an attempt to get it to load, what do I do? Do I have the authority to intervene? Monty's answer. You have the authority to intervene if the person is breaking the law. In this case, you should intervene. You can call your local emergency line and make a report, or the animal welfare hotline if your community has one. If it's possible to videotape, you should do that so that the authorities can have evidence of the brutality. One should not be silent in these cases. It is your duty to speak out. I am sure that you care for horses a great deal, or you wouldn't have bothered to ask this question. Let's assume for a moment that it was a dog or a child being beaten. My recommendation would be the same. It is not a good idea to confront violent people, especially while they are in a state of anger. It is not likely that one can make a significant difference while the brutality is in progress. It is, however, quite possible to make a great deal of difference by calling the proper authorities. Following these procedures can often prove to be a great favor to the violent person. He or she probably needs the help, and if everyone simply turns his head away, nothing will change. Many of these people were trained to do their work using extremely harsh measures. They actually think they are right. My goal as I work with people around the world is not to cast great blame on them, but to give them an alternative way to behave. Not only do I tell them about methods I feel are more humane and effective, but I also demonstrate for them using remedial horses so that I can show by example. Maybe someday you can carry on my work.
For more of these insights into good horsemanship, go to www.montyroberts.com and click on the orange banner that says Get Free Horse Tips.
Hi. I'm Monty Roberts, and I'm dedicated to training horses without pain. You can learn to do it too on my Equus Online University. Western, English, the beginner, or the advanced rider, it doesn't matter. You can connect with other students online too on our forum, and there's a new lesson every week. It's a lifetime of learning for you on my Equus Online University at MontyRoberts.com.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Yeah.
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty is looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged, in Brazil in March. The 11th, 12th is a weekend in Brazil near Sao Paulo. Then March 18th, he'll be over in England. He'll head to Scotland first at the Ingleston Country Club, March 18th. And then March 25th, he'll head to Kingston Marwood College with Martin Clunes, Doc Martin, at Dorset, UK. Then he's going to go over to the Europe mainland, and March 31, he'll be in Munich. April 9th, he'll be in Redefen. April 20, he'll be in Dorsten. April 22, he'll be in Alsfeld. And then we're going to skip some of the details to give you a look ahead to July, because we don't want anybody to miss out on that fast-filling Gentling Wild Horses course at Flagazette Farms. That's July 10 through 21. Mark that on your calendars. And then July 31, following that, to August 4th, will be Monty's special training at Flagazette Farms. And I know that was a lot to say, Jen, so what do we do to That's get them to a place where they can read it?
Well, that can all be found at MontyRoberts.com. And I had a quick question for you. Mm-hmm. Gentling Wild Horses course at Flag Is Up Farm on July 10th through the 21st. That's one course that you sign up for. Do you bring your own wild horse, or are there wild horses
Wouldn't
there?
That be interesting? Wouldn't that be fun?
I was curious.
We have never had anybody bring their own. Well, no, no, actually what we've done is there's two sources that we've done for the last couple of years on these. One is called Ralph, and Ralph, he brings up these horses. He raises up babies and into their twos and threes and fours up on the wild mountains behind us up in near Flagazet Farms in the San Ynez Valley in California. He raises up Percheron quarter horse cross. There's secret sauce in there that we're not sure about either. But there are these huge platter feet and the nicest.
Oh, they're Nigel's cousins.
Exactly. They look a little bit like Nigel, but they are bred to go into a bucking string. And you might go, oh, bucking string, they are the gentlest horses. But guess what? They're real athletes. So we bring some of those in. And we have been known the last 2 years to adopt BLM, Bureau of Land Management, wild Mustangs from the, some have been on the, just off the desert, and some are in the holding pens. So we adopt those and keep those and gentle those with our students throughout the year. But they start like right off of a stock trailer, open the gate and pour them in these little catch pens, and away the students work. And we get to touching on them and just, you know, literally a few days. And then the course goes for 2 weeks. So by the end, God willing, they are coming at, they're being led, and we lead them over to the round pens across the yard. And Jamie Jennings went through this. And, you know, any horseman who just loves the whole nature of horse and wants to be safe and be around it, we've had total beginners in that pen, and we've had total professionals in that pen, and they all are basically at the same level when you put them in but everything is safe.
We have to stress here that the Gentling Wild Horse course is literally customized from student to student. Each student is going to grow and learn and interact with those horses at his own pace, in that it's not a case of today you're going to do join up. Let's toss you in the round pen.
No.
Monty keeps this all very much controlled, so that each student is incrementally learning to become versed in the language of Equus, so he can communicate safely and effectively. It's not just one size fits all, everybody tosses in here and you know. It's not like that at all.
And everybody signs up for this too. So if they, you know, if they're not comfortable getting into the there's auditors as well. Most of the time though, we've found that everybody wants to get in because when they're in safety chutes and area, we have them in areas that you can touch a wild horse because the horse is starting to trust already at that point. And then once you get to touching and they start to trust you and realize that you're not, you know, doing anything that's harmed them or caused any pain. In fact, hey, could you rub that spot over my wither one more time? I kind of like that, you know, they start to get into it. And it's just wonderful to see. It is really communicating with a wild animal that says, I really want to trust you. And it's interspecies communication because it's gestural, like signing for the deaf. Yeah. And so when you get into showing them with your body that you're trustworthy and there's no pain connected with the human body, they want to be your partner. That's what I love about horses.
There you go. If you always wanted to be the little boy on the beach in the Black Stallion movie,
yeah,
here's your opportunity. You can sign up for the Gentling Wild Horses Clinic.
Won't be riding them that week.
Well, we won't be riding them, but next best thing. And that's July 10th through the 21st of 2017. And it's at Flag Is Up Farm in California. And as I said, you can find all the information at MontyRoberts.com. Or you can give them a call at Flag Is Up Farms. The phone number there is 805-688-6288. And for details about today's show, you can go to horsemanshipradio.com, where we'll have links to our guests and photos and more information. And we love your feedback. We want to hear from you on the Facebook page. The Facebook page is Monty Roberts. Fancy that. And if you're one of those people that lives your life 125 characters at a time, Monty Roberts is on Twitter. And his handle is Monty_Roberts. And go get your app so you don't miss any episodes. Horse Radio Network has an app that works on Android or iPhone. Go to your app store and download it today. It's quick, it's free, and it's easy. Or if you're old school, you can subscribe via iTunes.
That's right. Yeah. And many, isn't that crazy to say that?
No irony there at all.
No, but many thanks to our sponsors who make this program possible. Yes, that's IFA.com. Thank you, Mark Hebner. And we've got Omega Fields. Thank you, Sean. And we've got MontyRobertsUniversity.com. And you can imagine that would be thank you, Monty. So be sure to visit all the other great shows, too, on the Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com. And until next time, have many happy horse hours.